The idea for the panel just comes from many years of seeing the word curate describe things outside of museum activities. So when a restaurant curates its menu, when Altmark's Parties has a curated list of bands, the word is no longer only applied to museums and that field. It's on the rise in media and technology circles. So this panel is sort of to look at what people mean when they use curation to describe finding, bundling information, sharing information online, and seeking out the most relevant information. I have on the panel Patty Johnson, who has a blog, Artfag City, and Cece Moss Rhizomes, who runs the Rhizome site, and also Rex Orgatz, whose organization, Kind of Sort of Media, is kind of advising people how to curate. But maybe we could start with you, Cece, as I think many people would think of Rhizome as an example of good curation online. And I mean, would you say it's a curated site? Or what?
Well, I think I should probably start off by explaining what Rhizome is for people who have maybe not have visited the site. Rhizome is an affiliate organization of the New Museum, and we support artists who are working with emerging technologies. And the Rhizome blog is just one of our many programs. We have commissions. We also have an events calendar. We have opportunities section of the site. And our events calendar and our opportunities section are populated by our members who post to those sections. So it's a really like a collaborative open site, and the Rhizome blog is just one of the many things that we do. We also do public programs, and we also have an amazing archive of new media art too, the Art Base. So when I think about what I do for editorial, I see that as an additive to all these other great resources that we already offer to our community. And our community is really, you know, it's artists, it's professors, it's students, it's, you know, technologists. We have a really diverse readership. And the voice I try to represent is not my own singular voice, and I think that sort of differentiates what I do from maybe some of the other panelists. I think that I would try to present like a chorus of different voices. And so we have a number of different staff writers, Ed Halter, Brian Dwakor, Jacob Gabori, who, you know, contribute content to the site. I also have a number of other freelance writers who work for us all over the world. So I really try to, you know, keep the voice diverse. But I also blog there day to day. And a lot of, you know, my day to day blogging is, you know, I definitely post up a lot of art to the site. I love Vork, and I was really influenced by them and how they presented art. And often when I, you know, post up documentation of artworks or actually link to artworks on the site, I try to, you know, put a sort of curatorial touch, i.e. like, you know, I might put together a selection of artworks that look at ice as a theme and a number of different things. We also have the Writers Initiative, so we commission long-form articles that are more in-depth, and, you know, I look at something like Efflux Journal and all the wonderful essays that they put up, and I love, and I hope that, and something even like Art Forum, too, and Cabinet and other publications that have really great in-depth information, and so those essays I sort of see as maybe long-form articles that someone can actually sit down and read instead of, you know, another thing that they just zip through on their RSS feed. We have a bunch of different columns, I would call them. We have general web content where we kind of look at sort of popular culture online. We had one major post that was just all CAPTCHA art, which was really fun. We recently had one a few weeks ago that was the Handsome Face image template, and it was a bunch of different, you know, from boards like 4chan and that sort of thing. So we'll look at sort of like the larger world of at popular culture online. I really tried to pull together content from a bunch of different sources, and I'm not the sole curator or editor. I really feel like it's a bunch of different people who are pitching in for the Rhizome blog, and that yeah, I think what we've done and what we've been able to accomplish is the result of a lot of different voices and a lot of different people.
Okay. That's very interesting. But maybe in contrast, Patty, as your site is, it's kind of individually driven, how do you feel, would you say what you're doing is curating? Would you say that the aspects of blending content, like blending video and photos, I mean, you must have the same issues, I imagine.
No, I don't think what I'm doing is curating. I think what I'm doing is blogging. I consider myself a blogger or a critic, whatever somebody wants to call me. I mean, I think the ways that curation make their way into my site tend to be with additional projects that I do in the external, well, outside of the blog. So, you know, I've always run the blog from the perspective that it's really important that you have a relationship online with people online and with people offline. So last year I did this project at Verge Gallery, which is curation in the traditional sense of the word. So Verge is a gallery located in Sacramento, and I did a show with the help of some people who were working with me at the time at ArtFag City, and it was a show about beauty, the intersection of beauty and the downtown scene and fashion. So I guess that there was a lot of very new artwork there. Sacramento is not exactly the center of a lot of artistic activity, although they T-Bowed, I think, Wade T-Bowed came from there, but that's what they've got. So this was like a pretty big deal for them. The other thing that I've worked on most recently is the fifth year celebration of my blog and the launch of a record called The Sound of Art, which basically takes the sounds of different art installations, performances, videos, like over the past 5 years, puts them together on a record. It's a DJ battle record, so like all the sounds are sampled and they're cut shorter because a lot of times, you know, and like art, you look at an art video, usually it's like a lot of times anyway, a lot of times it's like 50 minutes long. It's not really appropriate for a battle record where people are using small samples. So we had, like I had a producer, you know, work with me to produce this album full of tiny clips from art, like art sounds. And they were submitted via the blog, but also stuff that I curated myself. So there was a selection process in two different kinds of ways. But, I mean, I think I'm not sure whether curation is exactly the right word for a lot of what I do with these kinds of projects, which tend to involve a lot of people. And, you know, Sound of Art, like, I have a thank you list that's, like, I would say maybe three-quarters the length of the thank you list that's in the Whitney Biennial. Like, it's a really, in that catalog, it's a really long thank you list. And so those projects take, they really involve the community. So I'm maybe one person that's like an organizer of sorts, which is kind of a funny word for me because I'm not actually that organized. But, you know, I think curation for me tends not to be an individual project. It's one that involves a lot of people, and I think that on the web, that's something that I mean, maybe curation was sort of always that way, but it's especially that way on the web.
Okay. I'm going to ask a question. Are you saying that curation on the web is usually singular or usually group?
I think for me, anyway, I think a lot of times it involves a community.
Right. Okay.
You know.
So, I mean, Rex, what would you say is curation, at least, when people apply that word to the web? I mean, what are they talking about? And do you think you're doing it? Are you advising people to do it?
I'm really interested in the term in the context of this room and this building, just because I'm probably coming from a space outside of the museum space, and I feel like there's probably a sense of ownership that museums have about the term, and there's probably been some friction about the adoption of the term outside of a true museum space. And was it Robert Scoble who started using it? I don't remember how it exactly sort of trickled over onto the internet.
Made it popular, at least.
Yeah, it popularized the notion of people like me calling themselves curators, I guess. And certainly there's something to this idea, everything from cool hunting to pitchfork, you could call some sort of curatorial thing. At some point you start to wonder whether or not that's any different than anything that else ever existed was curation. But yeah, I mean, I'm interested in the adoption of the term by my industry, I guess, first of all. And second of all, there's something there that's going on with people who have, over the last 10 years or so, been really internet connected and just slowly seen an emergence of a mass amount of content and the importance of people who to come along and try to filter that content and deliver it to a more finite audience, but a more specialized and dedicated audience. I guess that we could call that curation. I'm not exactly sure if we could quibble about the term or not. I do tend to use it, and I do talk to a lot of the companies I work with about the idea. But to be honest, like a lot of them are already doing it in some way, shape, or form anyway. My own personal history with it is that I used to have a blog called Femoculus. And well, I guess it's the internet, so you can't ever say you used to have because it's always there in some way. But I don't update it anymore. And I had been doing it for over 10 years. And I gave up on it probably about 6 months ago after some existential strife about whether or not to quit. What happened for me personally was that it was a link blog. It's in the genre that, you know, people, if you know, like Jason Kotke or Andy Bios-Waxy you can name so many other things, but really short form, trying to find interesting things on the internet day by day. And what happened was that that idea seemed sort of interesting and a space that you could own 5 years ago, and now seems impossibly like everyone. I think Tumblr and Twitter really killed any potential of any link blogger to really exist right now, just because, for better or for worse, of course, because everyone became a curator, everyone became a link blogger, and so it just seemed precious to continue to do it. And so I really abandoned it out of its, because the forum became democratized, say, essentially. Like everyone was, you hit a button, it says retweet. You hit a button, it says reblog. You have a site that does nothing but that. Just nothing but hitting buttons and repurposing other people's stuff. It's like, that's way more work than I was doing, and I was only writing a sentence and making a link, or way less work than I was doing. So, I'm a former curator.
Okay. So, I mean, that brings up the point of the changing of what is a blog today, and that it obviously Twitter and Tumblr and a lot of other sites, even Facebook, have really changed the look and need for blogs. I think your points about the link blogs kind of dying out, that's definitely true. But what about longer form blogs? And also the fact that Gawker is, the next version of Gawker is going to look like a webzine, and a lot of what we thought of as blogging is just kind of integrating in more mainstream publications, so that's kind of a gray area. Would anyone like to take this?
I guess I'd say for sure the form of blogging is evolving as far as I would say the reemergence of long form content and that being an equitable business model, a la Gawker blogs and others. However, I'd say that the personal blogger is still dying. There's still like the there's still so many people out there that have live journals 1 week, or maybe not live journals anymore. But then the next week, B5 or Gawker Media or Business Insider or whoever picks them up, and they abandon it, and their goal was to end up in a space of a profession. And it's certainly become a professionalized industry. And the independent thing, and yes, we can all still point to them, and yes, we still read some of them, but they are increasingly less created. There's becoming fewer of them happening every day, and I think more and more of them are turning over their careers to someone else. And that someone else can be a larger media enterprise, or it can be Facebook. I mean, people are starting to write long-form weird things on Facebook nowadays, you know? So.
Well, it was at that time, a lot of people started blogs not to be media necessarily. It was a blog you made just for your friends to look at. I know a lot of people maybe in 2004, 2005 would basically freak out if they saw their traffic exceeded 20 hits a day because it was basically something for friends to look at. So that kind of commentary maybe has moved to social media, but it, at the same time, the blog is the quickest way to get a new voice online, and I'm wondering, Patty, what you think?
Well, just a question. Can you make a Tumblr private, or is that
I didn't think you could, but actually I just saw someone, is he here? Yeah. It wasn't Nick, but I saw someone else's Tumblr today that was marked as private, and I was really annoyed. I was like,
oh, interesting.
I won't say the person was, but it was like, would you try to prove something? But I don't even know how it works. Or like, do you have to like make a friendship request or like you do on Twitter? I don't know.
Well, because it seems like, you know, when blogs were, I mean, I first started my blog on Blogspot in 2005, and like, you know, it was, for me, there was a big decision, like, you know, am I going to be Wonkette and like be anonymous? And I mean, that didn't last long for her, and it didn't last long for me. But you know, it was also like, I mean, people had private blogs all the time. Like, the idea that you would even do that now seems, I mean, I guess people protect their tweets, and it's really annoying to me.
But you still, even the case I'm talking about, you know, I know who it is. It's not an anonymous person or someone, which is kind of interesting because it was a rite of passage, especially in New York in early blogging history, to have an anonymous blog that then got outed, and then New York Times wrote about you, and then you got a job at Gawker Media. Like, it was like that was a process. And that the idea of the anonymous voice thing doesn't really exist anymore. There's still private things, which is almost like it almost evolved with like the private club idea, right? You knew who was in it, and you envied it, but you didn't go into it. There's some analogy there, I think, right?
But I didn't answer your question, which I now forget. What was it?
Well, the idea of the personal blog and, I mean, the relevance of it today, I'd say that is still the easiest way for someone who wants to be a writer to get their information out. It's still the format that is...
Yeah, I mean, I think it's just a lot harder to be a personal blogger now than it used to be and get, you know, a certain amount of attention for it because there's a lot more out there than there used to be. Like, I think that I would have... Doing what I do now would be very difficult if I were just starting.
On the other hand, I'm thinking that when I started out, at first, maybe 2002, having a blog made you media, but then 2004, it seemed like everyone has a blog, you're not getting a press pass or anything. Now, because it's kind of tapered off a little bit, it's easier to get press passes as a blogger, even if, I mean, have you noticed that as well?
Oh, yeah, no, absolutely.
No, I just think also things have changed, and I think things are more heterogeneous, too, you know? So I feel like if you're a blogger and you want to be a writer, you might, like you do often on your blog for Elle Magazine, you might repost, like, a section of something that, you know, appeared elsewhere, but you're still blogging on your own site. And I know a lot of writers who are freelance writers who have their own blog, but then, you know, are also writing for X, Y, and Z publications, so they're using their own blog to kind of, like, you know, just be their platform for their content, you know?
Right, but I mean, I think when I started in 2005, one, I didn't know how to write, so I spent, like, a couple years learning how to do that, and two, like, it was through that process, I mean, it's basically the process that, like, Rex is describing, like, people got to know me through my blog. Then I was offered a job at the Elle magazine with a column. Like, I think the idea that, like, you would work individually as a lone blogger without, like, Lindsay Pollock's blog, the art market blog, I think is a far more common model now, where she's, like, an established writer. She writes for Bloomberg News, and she uses this to promote herself, as opposed to using the blog to build a career in the first place, which I think is a lot harder.
Or like all of the mommy bloggers out there who are, you could call them independent because they have their own site, but they're part of a larger network where they're getting ad revenue off of some being affiliated with PopSugar or whatever other affiliations there are. But you could say they're independent, but they're still like part of this larger organization that they're using.
So have you noticed new, understanding there's a new phase in blogging, what about the new cycle of attention? It used to be maybe you'd have something put up on a blog and a larger, more established blogger like Kotke or Boing Boing would pick it up, and then a news reporter who reads those sites might write a New York Times style piece about that. What do you think is the process of attention now, that directing attention?
For sure it's through, my company's releasing lots of new products lately, things for startups, some media companies, and we're just coming out with new stuff. Mm-hmm. And even 2 years ago, the process by which you start talking about that from a whatever marketing perspective, I guess, was that you would try to get New York Magazine to write about you, or the New York Observer to write about you, or whoever. And there's still some of that, of course, that goes on in that process of trying to get people interested in what you're doing. But by far, more time is dedicated nowadays to getting other people to be the advocate for the thing you're doing. That is, finding the right people to use your platform and then having them talk about it, right? That's what, I guess, the term social media is, which is shifting the marketing over to other people. It's like the genius of Mashable, which is I think the second biggest blog on the internet, and I don't really like it, to be honest, but the genius of it is that they gave all of these people who really wanted attention a vehicle to get attention, and so all of those people now are marketing all the things they write on it, and they don't have to spend anything on marketing. It's really genius if you think about it. It's like target a people who really want to have people notice who they are and then give them the tools to do it. But, you know, that's the far end of it. But even closer, it's like, we just released a new video platform called VU a couple weeks ago. And we know that if we can create the right tools for people who are using it to distribute out what they're doing to other people, then then we don't have to spend. We should never spend an ad dollar, right? That it should be them that's pushing it out there because they feel passionate about it.
Yeah, I mean that's one perspective, but also from the blogging perspective, I feel like Facebook and Twitter are really important in terms of like getting something picked up. You know, if someone has like a Twitter feed that has a big following, and they post a link to something on Rhizome, and our hits jump. I know. I think those sorts of platforms are really important for like the circulation of content and how people come to you.
I was gonna say that's what actually what I mean is that I try to get those prominent people to use those platforms to market like that, because they don't, they're not calling their friends, but if they put it on Twitter, right?
Can I just say one thing about Twitter? I can hardly wait for that fad to end, because it's just like, Joanne and I have talked about this a lot, but it's like a repeat machine. All you see all day are the same links. It's a really bad link aggregator. And like, I think people used to be using it a lot better. Like I used to go on that, like I used to use it a lot more because people were saying like really funny things, and like people were, I think like more invested in it. Like now, things that I used to say that would get picked up immediately fall flat a little bit, and I think like people are getting a little bit tired of the medium, and I just sort of like, thank God, like I can hardly wait till it, like
is,
I just
is it a filter problem, like you're not like, do you think there's good content on it and you're not getting it, or do you just think there's just it's just garbage?
I think that a lot of it is garbage. I mean, I don't filter it that much, and I know there are tools there so that I can filter the hell out of it. But, I mean, I just feel like people use it a lot more for sharing links than they used to, and there's, like, I'm getting used to the conventions in which they share a link, so, like, the number of times I see, like, wow, before some really boring link is, you know, it's too much.
There's not enough space to describe what the link is, and it might be, well, this is cool. And, I mean, those are the links I'm not going to click because it's going to be whatever's on the top of BuzzFeed that day. What's interesting about Twitter is it started when we didn't have smartphones, really. It started as text messages sent to your phone. So that was when it was an opportunity to be witty. And in the beginning, it was mostly quips. And somewhere along the line, it became more like a link blog. And I hate to say it, but a lot of people aren't great link bloggers. They don't know what's really popular on the web for that day. And so what I would say, if there is such a thing as a curator online, the problem to solve is really this issue of redundancy. And
yes.
And that I know Facebook right now has this mention feature, which will apparently aggregate when all of your friends have mentioned someone, so they're not all in different places. Do you know of any other sites or apps that we could use to kind of reduce that issue?
I'll give a plug for something that I'm not involved with and is still in alpha or beta, and it's coming out soon. It's by a guy named Noah Breyer. Some of you might know him. It's called Percolate, and I think it's going to be huge, and here's how it works. I hope he doesn't mind me telling him about his product. That's in alpha. No, he'll be fine. If you have an RSS reader, say you have a Google Reader or whatever, and you sync it up to this thing, you just say, you know, here's my credentials, and go figure out what's the magic inside of my Google Reader. And then you also tell it, give it your face or your Twitter credentials, and you say, now analyze my Twitter feed. And what it does, every day it emails me just a list of the most popular things that are on all of the 700 feeds in my RSS reader and in the maybe 700 Twitter followers I have, just a list of 10 things that those people are talking about. And it has, like, it's pretty interesting because it has, like, you can put controls on it and move things up and down about, like, kinds of things you're looking for. But even if you don't do any of that stuff, it just sends you a list. And this list is amazingly good. Like, it's just, like, these really are the top 10 things that I want to know. And the reason it works is because I've already selected the sources that I want, right? It's not a top 10. It's not tech meme. It's not whatever. You know, yeah. It's, like, it's made for me. And that's just one example, and I think that those kinds of personalized filters are probably the future. There was a while there where everyone thought that news organizations were going to be those things, and for a little while, like, even the New York Times had, like, a little thing where it was like they were trying to put other people's blog posts on the homepage and stuff, and I don't think that ever worked. I think that because it wasn't it was them giving you a news feed when the future was supposed to be your peer network or your... Well, in this case, it's interesting because it's better than your peer network, because if it's just your Facebook friends, it might suck because your friends maybe don't have good taste. But if it's your RSS reader, it's probably pretty good because those are people, most of whom you don't even know, but you really trust them, right? It's like you've added them in some way. So I think, I mean, there'll be a lot of stuff like that, I think. Filters will, you know, for sure get better in the coming years, yeah.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I'm thinking back, you know, way back, 2002 or so, when the bloggers would look at blog decks first thing in the morning. Whatever is the most blogged article, if you were maybe a war blogger, you would blog about that to join the conversation. If you were more of a non-war blogger, you avoided those articles. What other tricks what would you say you're using to?
I love Delicious. I love Delicious. So I use Delicious. And the other thing, too, is, like, the network of people in my Delicious are all artists, for the most part, or curators. And so I'm kind of seeing what they're reading. And actually, I also really like Tumblr. I know that it's getting kind of a bad rap, but I really think it's a really wonderful resource for especially artists who are doing, like, visual research for their projects and to kind of get a sense of what they're thinking about and looking at. I think
is great. And but yeah, and also the other thing that's great about Delicious is there's more space to explain why. So it, you're not kind of like Twitter caught in just a few or very limited number of characters. You can cut and paste, you know, the entire first paragraph of an essay if you want to, and you get a bit better sense of it there. So I really like that. I use it.
You know, this is pretty old school, but like for the past year, I've been working pretty hard at developing my comment community. So, I mean, it's not really a way to, like, filter content that much, but it's certainly a way to produce additional content. And I don't know, I just really like it a lot. Like, if the comment community is good and you work really hard at it, and, I mean, I'm a bit of a, like, and I definitely do, I think you can end up with threads that are where you work out a lot of problems, things that you couldn't do on your own. And I don't know, I mean, that doesn't really have that much to do with curation, but it...
Yeah, but what's interesting about comments is people don't normally put a link in a comment. Comment is usually just text your opinion on something.
Yeah.
Unless it's spam. And,
unless it's spam, yes. Which is very much a problem. But, I mean, one thing that I sometimes am frustrated with when I'm just looking around different sites is sometimes I just want to read and I don't want to be directed elsewhere. And so that's another issue with curation is how we read online, how if you've got videos in the middle of text and there are all these links to elsewhere, I mean, as soon as I click on those links, I'm probably going to go there and be distracted again. So what would you say is the role of the curator in that capacity of the blended content?
I mean, what we all are just sort of, we're producing content, right? We're basically editors or bloggers, or I'm a blogger. I curate outside, and there's a curatorial, like, you know, space, I think that also our feeds really affect readership practices, and that has been like a huge shift in the last 5 years in having like a Google Reader, so that people have like less, they're seeing what, you know, your feed along, you know, with 15 other art blogs or something like that, and so they're just kind of running through it, and it gets situated in a different way. I guess it just depends on like how you read content online, but I personally use Google Reader, so I am going through like whatever 50 plus blogs a day, you know, and you're kind of, I'm part of that, or like what the things that I produce are part of that, and the things that, you know, Patty, is, you're also on my RSS feed, you know, so you know what I mean, and that's part of the way I read.
So what do you mean by blended content, like the types of, like, where you throw in links and stuff like that?
Well, blended content meaning if you've got video on the page and text and, you know, maybe an essay with a lot of images and audio and links elsewhere, is this, you know, is it maybe a good idea to pare down a little bit? Like, the same way that a comment on a post, we know it's going to be text. It's not telling you go here and then come back to me.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. I spent a long time thinking about that sort of stuff when I was redesigning the blog. And honestly, I don't know that that's my strength. Like, I mean, I have links to the side because when I had them in the main part of the blog, people were like, this is too much. I don't like it. Like, I want to have the choice to, like, be able to, you know, read your links separately or not. But that, I mean, even then, that was 3 years ago. But for me, it was just like, I'm, you know, I want, because the kind of posts I write, I mean, I write a lot of one-off posts, but, you know, I try to write posts that, or invite people to write posts that are fairly significant, so I want them to stay on the page. So I tend not to throw out too much that's going to take them off. And I try, I think image management is sort of a different beast altogether, which is a series that I do every year where people I invite artists to just do just post images, and they usually the essays are very lengthy, and they take like a couple, you know, often they take more than a month to develop. And so, I mean, again, those tend to be really image heavy. They tend to be very video heavy. One of the posts last month nearly brought the site down because Jezebel linked to it, and you know, I have. I mean, it's not that my site can't handle that, but like with over 200 images on one post, like it was fairly significant. But I don't know. I think I started rambling, so I'll stop.
That's fine. I mean, the conversation has to go to Tumblr, as you know, right. Tumblr being what people say first when they think of curation in the web now, as it is so about the user's personal taste. And I'm just wondering, what are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, I mean, when you said the mix of media as a reading experience, I mean, Tumblr's the obvious example where you're, here's a picture, here's an MP3, here's some text, here's a chat session, and it really, it managed to take that idea and make it an interesting product of disjuncted different media types and make it still compelling. I think here's something I've been thinking a lot I was talking earlier about my dismay of blogging as a medium lately, and I just started moving away from it, and I've been thinking a lot about what it was that made me start to appreciate other platforms more. And I'm just thinking this through in the last week or so, so maybe this won't quite make sense yet, but when blogging started, what it was a publishing platform. You typed into things, and it went out to people. It was a interface built for writing. And you think about the things that have evolved since then, Twitter, Facebook, Tumblr, et cetera, they're not just interfaces for writing, they're interfaces for reading and writing. And there's something about the collapse of that idea. That first moment when I saw Twitter, when I realized there's a box here where you're typing and there's a bunch of stuff down here where you're reading, I think people don't realize how big of a change that was, because blogs aren't like that. Blogs are like this ugly WordPress template that you have and you type into and then you wait for comments to come to you. Like, they're two very different interfaces and they're not connected in any way. No one sees your WordPress admin. Everyone sees a Tumblr admin. Like, you have to practically be on Tumblr to have a Tumblr. I mean, or to read Tumblr. It almost doesn't even make sense to say you read Tumblr and not have one. So I'm thinking a lot about this idea that what does it mean to have these interfaces where you're reading and writing at the same time? And I think that's where curation is going to go. And I don't know exactly what that interface looks like. But I think that there's some future idea there that mixes together something we were talking about earlier, which was the overload of information and the filtering aspect, something that gives me stuff that only matters to me, but then allows me like an easy way to put my things back into it, whether they're comments or whatever it is, just even hitting that stupid like button might be enough. But whatever it is, like, it gives me some ability to push back into that thing something, I think is going to be really big. And those read-write interfaces are, I don't think Tumblr's the end game. I think there's going to be other things like that coming. So.
Okay. I mean, one thing that I was thinking, one of the problems with Tumblr right now is that a lot of times what ends up there is just stripped of its context. So you'll find a lot of images that are impossible to trace, basically. They're just tumbled around and reblogged.
Isn't that awesome, though?
I think that's totally awesome.
It's awesome, but it's also, I mean, sometimes you really want to know. It's a picture of a city. You're curious. You want to go there. You think it's a good thing? I mean, I
think that that's certainly something that's affecting art making, because, I mean, you look at a site like Dump FM where, and I've talked about this on the blog, where things get... I mean, their source isn't important, and then you see them manipulated so many times that at a certain point, like, you could try to attach an author to it, but that would be a lost cause because people are just, you know, manipulating so much things to such a degree that that becomes irrelevant. I think that that's a fairly significant change that the internet has had. Far more on art making, far more so than somebody just like plugging in a search term for an image and like looking it up on Google.
So before we go to questions from the audience, I'm just wondering what, maybe going through all of us here, what would be a better word for this than curation or content curator? I mean, there are geeky ways of saying it, like content aggregation, or just a non-sexy way, something like just selector or editor. I mean, what Patty, would you call it that we're kind of talking about but not really naming?
I have no idea. I understand that it's not the right answer for this panel.
But I don't know if we need a term.
Right, yeah, it's
do
just,
we need a
it's
term?
It's a practice.
It's a practice that we're all kind of involved with. And I don't know if we, I mean, it's important.
I feel like it's just being a person on the internet today that that's the role you have. I mean, what about you, Rex?
Yeah, it's like the gender neutral pronoun. Like, it makes good in theory, but no one is ever going to adapt their language to actually start saying it. And by that, in that vein, I would say kind of what I was saying earlier, something that mixes together reader and writer, because that's what is going on there. That is the definition of curation to me, because it's a strong practice of knowing everything in that space. Consuming and then pushing it back out in some way.
And just adding to that, actually, I mean, I think this has been talked a lot about in the fine art world, but curator comes, the root word for that means to care for. And I think, you know, when you're talking about content online and that kind of curation, that is not a relevant concept because what happens on the internet is, you know, I mean, you may have that one party picture where you were throwing up and, like, that's going to be on the internet for the rest of your life, but you could have spent, like, 3 months blogging for an arts and technology site and it's all gone, like, when they decide to get rid of their reblog or whatever it is that they have. So, you know, like, you kind of, that notion of, like, caring for things, is not part of the online definition of curation, in my opinion.
Yeah, absolutely.
But it seems disagrees.
No, I think there's a sense of care. I mean, why, when you do tweet "wow" and post a thing, there's you care enough to share it with people. So there's, I mean, it's a different kind of. I mean, maybe we have different definitions of care, but there's an interest, maybe an invested interest of some sort.
Well, no, but that's different than I think, like protecting something, like.
Backing up your tweets.
You know, backing up your tweets. Yeah. Like, I have, like, tweets from when I... Because I started on Twitter fairly early, and, like, a lot of them are gone now. And, you know, I don't really care that much because it's hard to search for them anyway, but sometimes I would kind of, like... Sometimes
it's also the reverse, though. There's, what's this? Robin Sloan, the guy that does Snark Market. He did this thing where he wrote a program that would go through and delete all of his tweets that were over a week old because he thought that somehow having this archive of information that was no longer relevant was valuable. Like, he felt, Twitter in particular, it just seems instantly dated. And so he wrote this program to have it all deleted in real time or over everything over 2 weeks or a week or whatever it was. And then the funny thing was he got a job at Twitter, and then he had to quit his program.
So any questions in the audience? Lauren?
I'm sorry. I introduced, and now I'm burning with the questions on your first one. But... I've learned through this panel that museum curation is very different than online curation, I think. I think when there was excitement over not attributing images, I almost had a heart attack because I would never not attribute an image. And I actually have a Tumblr, and I go to great pains to credit every image that I post. But I think that also something that I was noticing, and I started raising my hand back, Rex, when you mentioned this idea of you think that filters are a kind of new direction, and that really struck me as something that is also really different from museum curation, because, and maybe I don't fully understand, but what you meant, but you know, as an institution, you want to reach the broadest audience possible, and sometimes you even want to reach them, you know, and teach them things that they might not want to know, because it's good for them, or because you passionately, you know, believe that they should see XYZ, you know, artist who they might not know about but is important, like with the Geisen show that was here not so long ago. So I thought that was kind of interesting, because what I understood from you was that there's going to be this tendency to kind of make your audience small but targeted, you know? And I think that's something also that, you know, people talk about with the web as a potential danger, you know, that youth are kind of going and from their cafeteria offline and then hanging out, you know, in their cliques online. But anyway, I just thought it was interesting that you were talking about a sort of your audience being curating it so that it's small, whereas institutions try to curate it so that they get a really big audience, you know, that really crosses taste.
Yeah. So I want to actually reply to the first thing first. I mean, there is a art practice that is about the image out of context. Certainly, like decontextualizing images that and putting them in a new setting is certainly an art. And that's actually kind of what I meant by saying it was exciting or awesome, whatever word I was used, is actually that kind of moment of disorientation, not the moment of being pissed off because somebody stole your painting. You know, there's a little bit of difference there. It's sort of like the Tumblr as art experience or whatever. The other one is that I think probably the part of the problem is that we're talking about two things at once. We're talking about the way you create something that for other people to consume, which I'll make an analogy to being a museum curator. We're comparing that, maybe incorrectly, I'm not sure, to something that is a filter, which is creating something for you to consume, right? There's so many online tools that are built for making only your life better, not for creating content out there. And the interesting ones are the ones that do both, right? But the example that I was using was actually something that just takes all of the stuff that's out there and just makes it more simple for me to use. Now, I don't want to give away too much of this guy's product idea, but there's something interesting in what's going on. What he's going to do, though, is he's going to actually like allow you to redistribute your filters. And so what you'll be able to do is view other people's filters. So that's when it actually gets kind of crazy if you think about it. And by the way, these are all robots that are running this stuff. But yet they're not, because there's a human element, because people are putting things into it. So, yeah, I don't know what all that kind of equals out to, but... I'll say one more thing about 4 or 5 years ago, there was a lot of talk in the industry about this idea of algorithms and machines that would curate the internet experience for us and bring us certain kinds of content with just running programs and doing analysis on it. I don't mean to pick on anyone, but I'll just like name one thing. Like Outside In, which is a company that aggregates mass amount of internet data and tries to localize it to a neighborhood and say, you live in the financial district, here's a feed of information for you. It seemed like the future at the time, and I can totally see why the product was invented. And I think what's happened is that in those intervening years, and I think this is a kind of a cry for humanism in a way, is that we have realized that those machines actually aren't that effective, and I'm not sure they're actually going to get that much better. They'll get a little bit better at delivering you the completely automatic, robotic, daily me, or whatever you want to call it. But if you think about it, how much success we've had as humans to be curators in the past couple of years, it's really, really significant. And what's interesting is a lot of that success is based upon using some of those tools to filter down the first row of information to get me like, all right, give me 100 things that might matter to me. All right, here's 10 things that might matter to you. And that's kind of the process. And I don't know, I can't think if that's corollary to the museum curation experience or not exactly. But it, but yeah, I'm sure there's something with like, I mean, how many pieces of artwork do you see in a day? It's like, and where do you put them all in your head? That's kind of what bloggers are going through, right?
I understand. I thought you were talking about like narrowing an audience, but you're talking about something different.
Yeah, I mean, certainly there's like nicheification of blogs for sure. Like, it would be a fun game to play. Like, what's the most niche Tumblr? I don't, you know.
Chemists who love unicorns.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, there probably is one. I mean, might be a dead blog, though. Any other questions? Yes.
Okay, thanks. I guess I might be the oldest person in the room. And I'd like to give some historical perspective. In the 70s, there was a revolution in technology as big as the internet, which was Xerox got cheap, printing got cheap. The Japanese started selling everybody double cassette decks. And so for the first time really in history, you know, that democracy of curation happened where people could publish, you know, and it happened in punk rock where it was a very definite difference where before that, the people who were inside the industry decided who would be successful and then made an image and promoted them to everybody else. What happened then was like basically people passing around notes at the back of class in the form of fanzines. And my particular personal bit of I made badges and people wearing badges, you know, which was the personal curation of your lapel, of what badges you wore in your lapel. And over a period of time, you built up a collection of badges, which was, and the whole thing was the ability not just to be a consumer, but to partake in you know, the evolution of culture and the process. I've lost my thread here. But, you know, so the thing of, you know, curation over time is making that collection. People got their pin collections, you know, of things that they'd represented. And so, those are, I would say, a crucial aspect of curation is that unique collection of taking out of a bunch of things which expresses the personality of the curator as much as anything else to make a collection. It's my first point. Secondly, you know, when the internet came along, and I waited keenly for this from that time, it took another 20 years to the point where people could just publish online without having to, like, go through the physical thing of making fanzines, which is quite a complicated business. And something that really impressed me was around 95, Nicholas Negroponte, who invented the phrase information superhighway, and he said that he saw the network not now as a superhighway where you went driving down the roads. He saw the net as a butterfly net or a fishing net. In fact, you were swimming in the bitstream and it was the beaver filters, and he saw that future. And I thought that was right, and I actually started doing a link blog in 95, and I actually gave it up when I started doing video in 2000. And I kind of like soldiered along alone with video, and it was only when they invented embedding that suddenly, you know, my video was able to act in the same way as a promotional thing for, you know, for bands as badges were. But I feel, you know, there's a point about curation that just as those punks were able to choose what the music was, that this is still a thing that's being reached within the art world, that the art world is still kind of top-down, and there's still quite a lot of room for bottom-up within the art world.
Okay. What would you say to that? There's a top-down, bottom-down, bottom-up art world.
I think that there's a lot of different art worlds, you know? So, I mean, that would be my answer. I mean, there's a lot of different spaces. I could sit here and name like 10 different DIY art spaces in Brooklyn. Do you know what I'm saying? So it's just, there's a lot of different.
But for people, you know, for people to like talk about it and spread the word and represent it in that way, there's still kind of room there. I think there's a lot of room. You know what I mean? In the same, you know, that even so, the people in the business, for people outside the business to present stuff.
I think it's interesting. I have Now that I think about it, I still have like an old record collection, but I also have like an old zine collection, and somehow, which is, if you think about it, essentially curation and it's media around, it's creating media around.
It's a form of collage.
Yeah, I think it's interesting that I keep the curated piece as much as I do the source, which is the records. Like they're as valuable to me, and in some cases more valuable. In fact, I might throw out the records first. You know what I mean? The thing I'd say is that the idea of embedding certainly changed curation. And that's another one of those things where people just don't realize that there was like a moment that it seemed like it was like 50 years ago or something that it was invented, but it was just so, I remember exactly when it happened. When I used to work for NBC, and
it was live journal.
Well, I was talking about the video embed, actually.
Yeah,
but
video embed was like live journal was the first thing where people started making video embeds so people could put them in their live journals. So I think it was 2000.
You probably did that. What I meant is like from the video platform end, it was YouTube that invented the idea of like being able to grab this code, pick it up, and put it on your other thing.
No, it was before YouTube. It was you could get embed code. Suddenly there were sites that were just creating embed codes for other people's videos. Four people on four bloggers predated YouTube, and YouTube came along behind. You know, I remember.
Anyone could do that if you went to go look for it. That's sure. But as a platform, as an idea, we're going to build into the business, like as an infrastructure idea, not as a you could find embed codes around the internet kind of way. It was when YouTube did it. It was really this moment where all of a sudden you started seeing these boxes all over the place, and you hit play, and then video would play inside of this page.
The difference with YouTube was the video actually played, whereas on the rest of them, they didn't.
Yeah. The video, of course, got better, too.
Got a question there, please.
I actually want to go back to the question that you asked your panel just before you finished up about what other terminology might be appropriate rather than curating. I'm Amanda. I work at iBeam, which is an art and tech center. And for a really long time in my practice, I kind of denied the term curator too, because I don't make museum exhibitions. I often make situations that might look more like parties or schemes of residencies where you bring artists together to make work in a collaborative context. And I think that, you know, Patty's point about the root of the term curator means carer, and when, you know, from my accent, I'm Australian, you can be a curator of a cricket pitch or a bowling green, means you're the caretaker of it. You know a hell of a lot about the topic or the thing that you're looking after and taking care of. I think the sort of selection process that you guys are talking about in terms of an online practice maybe has more in line with, you know, a Jamaican reggae DJ who's called a selector, right? So that maybe that kind of music industry is actually a more useful place to think about bringing that kind of, you know, curatorial terminology from. That really maybe people are, maybe it's a selection process rather than
sampling.
A curatorial process.
Yeah,
it's a sampling. It's, you know, it's a personal taste thing. Because I think when we're talking about the zines or the button collections, for me, that's a collection rather than a kind of curatorial practice. It's you've acquired a body of knowledge or work, and you've become a participant, certainly, in, you know, the production of culture. But I don't know that it's a curatorial process. The curatorial process is somehow something different from me.
I think that,
you know, in contemporary art practice generally, and particularly in contemporary art practice that engages with media, the process of curating is very different, because you're rarely curating objects. You're often curating experiences or participation or engagement in a different sort of a way. So anyway, I just wanted to throw out there that maybe, you know, other cultural spheres might be ways to go through rather than thinking of it as curating.
No, that's a great point. I absolutely agree. I don't think a restaurant is caring for its menu items necessarily when they say they're curating a menu. That aspect of care is often lost. Question, dotted shirt.
Okay. I just had a quick question. So it seemed like some of the speakers here had sort of a distaste for the preponderance of relinking blogs, and I was wondering if you guys feel that there's sort of like a flattening out of content in terms of what you guys write about or what you see that's being posted daily, like the quality or the kinds of things people even write about. And I was just kind of curious about that.
Yeah, it probably sounded like I have some dismay about the idea of reblogging, and I really don't. I mean, it's just sort of malaise with something that's sort of settled in, I suspect. I guess actually kind of playing off his point, the way I'd answer it is that I remember, how do I put this? It used to feel as though there was such a thing as an underground culture, and I don't think it would be very bold to suggest that the internet has made culture much more flat and accessible, and I don't think that's expressing anything that is that unique, and I think it's probably pretty well understood. I'm intrigued by the idea of people trying to do things online that aren't, they're intentionally not trying to reach a larger audience. 4chan, for sure. I'm contributing editor at Wired, and they're doing a new issue, I think it's next month, on the idea of simply underground culture. And they sent out an email to the editors and said, just try to think of stuff that that your mind goes toward when you hear the phrase underground. And I can't tell you how much I thought about it and how I had no answers left. Like, it seemed like everything that I could think of, someone would say, oh, seen that, done that. And I just feel like that expiration. So that's my no longer having excitement about it is something like that.
I just also want to make clear that I think reblogging is great, and I'm totally for it. And I also feel like what I don't think there's a necessarily a flattening out of culture. Like there's an opportunity to learn about very niche things. So there's more of it. I feel like it's not, you know, oh well, whatever. I can you know download an album that was only released, you know, in edition of 50 in 1980 or something like that, and who cares? Like it's actually, oh no, I'm actually going to seek this out, and it's amazing that I can find it, and then I can talk to other people who, you know. Know the solo project that the person was involved with or something like that. And so I don't think that's necessarily like a flattening out of culture. I think that's a contribution, and I think that's a great thing. And I don't think that means that there's no longer an underground. I think maybe, you know, I think that there is more of a niche culture, you know, where people kind of seek things out.
Okay, two more questions we had in the back.
Thank you. Excellent panel, by the way. Just, I'm sure we all feel that. I mean, it's really been terrific. Just quickly, if anyone could comment or just think about how these three terms, crowdsourcing, Wikipedia, and Google, play into this curation discussion. And in terms of, does the panel think the trend is more towards human or non-human curation? And, you know, where are we really going?
I feel like you answered that question already, sort of.
You want to take a shot?
No, I agree with it. Yeah, no, you. I mean,
there are the two aspects. Yeah. Is that there? It seems to be that they're working at once. I mean, on a more personal level, sharing with friends, and then on maybe a larger level, the actual sites cutting down on the redundancy would be using algorithms to aggregate. But
yeah, I mean, Wikipedia is in the back of my head about the idea of curation this entire time, and it's interesting to think about if that word applies to that, because it may not. I'm not sure, because there's something participatory there going on. But Google's interesting if you think about it, because Google's algorithm is based upon the network of other people's links and cross-links, and you could make some sort of argument that that's a curatorial experience or knowledge in some way, and that another word to kind of fit in there, I guess, that's also another buzzword is network. You know, there's a sort of network culture as much as there's a curation culture. Yeah. Yeah, I think that's all I got. Okay.
I just want to say that, like, for my particular projects, like, Google has not been, I mean, it's important, obviously, for my blog, but for the Sound of Art that I just did, I mean, that's, I would consider that a uniquely, a project uniquely born of the internet, but it exists as an object, and Google doesn't have that much to do with it. And nor really does crowdsourcing, like, but it does, I mean, for me, I guess I'm, and this is a reflection of my own personal interest, but I'm really interested in, and I think that it's because I run a fine art blog, but I'm really interested in the way that the real world, or like this anyway, for lack of a better term, like, intersects with, you know, what's going on online. So if I can produce an object through, like, the collection, a collection of, you know, people, then that's a really big deal for me. So, I mean, I guess I talked about that earlier, but I think that that's, that would be another way in which, I think the fine art world, it works with the internet more specifically, let's say, than like, I think that Kickstarter produces a lot of objects, but I don't know where I'm, maybe this is a dead end. That might have been a dead end. Can I apologize?
It's okay, we've got a question in the front, okay. Yeah.
So it seems like a lot of what you're talking about is basically curating curators. And so it's like crowdsourcing, but with a really good crowd that you've selected. And like Rex, I'm also pretty bullish on this sort of cyborg approach that marries this human touch to sort of the omniscience that computers can bring. So you want to sort of pick these really great curators. So you're curating a selection of curators, but then you sort of want a computer to find where their recommendations overlap with one another for you, because it's sort of people now curate so much that you can't sift through it all on your own. I guess my question is, certainly the premise behind it is that through that sort of curation of curation or super curation, the idea is that we're going to be getting better content, and I think so. Probably I run a site that's similar to Percolate, but for restaurant recommendations. But I wonder if you have any thoughts on whether, as art viewers or consumers, we're actually seeing better art or getting more out of art or content in general now that it's being put through this sort of Russian doll level effect of curation many times over. Does what comes out at the end to the end user, is that, are we getting better stuff? Are we more knowledgeable now than we were before that?
We're getting a lot of stuff. I mean, I think you can say that for sure. I'm not sure that you can, I'm not sure that I would say that we're getting better stuff. I mean, people produce a lot of crap. And I think that of that, like, there's that 90% rule, and like 10% of it is probably good. Are we seeing it more than we used to? I think maybe is the question that's behind all that. And I think we're seeing more of what we want to. And I think that that doesn't necessarily have anything to do with quality.
And I find that with my blog, if I quote from a book that's not available online, that becomes original content, and I can direct a lot of attention. You've got Sam Anderson, the New York Magazine writer. His Twitter feed is all quotes from books he's reading, and those are retweeted very often. So sometimes I do have to force myself away from things like Google Reader and Twitter, as I know it's already been filtered for me, and just go straight to the raw reading materials and dig.
The funny thing that happened when I quit my blog,
quit writing my blog is that I also quit reading blogs. And that's, I think people, that's actually true. Like, I really, really did mostly stop reading blogs. I had this brand, I have 700 things in my Google Reader, but I never go to it anymore. And I have this process now, and it's really, I guess it's liberating in some ways, where I have probably, like everyone else, that moment where you have 15 minutes, and you just go, all right, internet, impress me. And you go, I'm going to go to Twitter, or I'm going to go to the Owl, or I'm going to go to Gawker, or I'm going to go to whatever. And it's, some people have bookmarks, but I don't even do that, because that'll like be too limiting. I just go, what can I think of to type in right now? And it's really like internet, like the way it was in like 1996, where it's just, oh, here I'm over here now, and here I'm there. And I found that that thing, just doing that is like really, that I've removed the burden of for myself of needing to think about the best and the thing that I have to consume and the thing that everyone else is getting. And I don't go to things like Tech Meme anymore, even though, you know, it's from a practical perspective, it is what I should be reading. I just let chance happen a little bit more, and all I can say is that I don't know if it's better. My demeanor is typically, you know, naturally pessimistic, but I'm a overwhelming optimist about, I think the world is generally getting better. All I know is that, like, just kind of saying goodbye to all of that just made me happier, so...
That's sort of stumble upon, basically.
Yeah, a little bit like stumble upon. But even that feels like a system that's like gaming me in some way too. Like it's yeah.
So is that maybe a post curated world that you're talking about, or?
Well, it's like the machines just become too much after a while, right? It's just like, how do you introduce randomness back in, right?
Maybe we could take that, the panel could take that. How do we reintroduce randomness? I'd say read books.
There aren't enough links.
This is sort of the nice thing. I mean, I was thinking about this actually the other day in terms of surf blogs, because, like, I remember, like, doing this piece writing about, like these bloggers will get together, and they're artists, and they maintain these group blogs, and it's just like group image blogs. And when I did the piece, like a reporting piece about what this was and what people were doing, I spoke to a lot of artists who were like, well, you know, I just have to look at everything in the browser, and you know, and I thought, God, that's weird. Like, nobody, like, the days of just surfing the internet and like getting to somewhere you didn't think you were going to get to are gone. And so, I mean, I think the way to introduce randomness is you know, exactly what you're talking about. Just like typing something into typing a URL in and seeing where it takes you.
But then that's not even random either. Yeah. But.
Well, maybe you follow the links on a blog or something. I mean, I think that's the best. That's the best I got.
Well, I will happily start calling myself a content DJ instead of a content curator now that we have this panel. And I'd like to thank Rex and Cece and Patty and everyone for coming out. Thanks.
Thank you.